This is The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. After so many high-profile shootings by police officers in recent years, the Department of Justice is moving forward with a plan to collect data on all arrest-related deaths. While the FBI keeps track of some deaths linked to law enforcement-related shootings, police departments are not required to report all of their numbers. This has been seen as a sore point for police reform advocates who say comprehensive data for arrest deaths is critical to bring transparency to this high-profile and volatile issue. But what do you think? Do you welcome this development, or do you see this as a federal government intervention into a local law enforcement issue? There's lots of ways for you to join our conversation. You can give us a call at 210-614-8980, and you can also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. We're joined by Norm Stamper. He's a retired chief of police for the Seattle Police Department and author of the book To Protect and Serve. And also with us is Amanda Wook. She is the project director for the Texas Justice Initiative at the University of Texas at Austin, and she recently launched an online database. You can look at the deaths of thousands of people who died in police and state custody over the last 10 years. And welcome back to The Source, Norm and Amanda.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
So, Norm, let me ask you to get your reaction about today's developments with the Justice Department and the Baltimore Police Department agreeing to a negotiated court-enforced reforms. We heard about that in the newscast.
Well, I think it's apparent that the Baltimore Police Department and many others across the country are falling far shy of constitutional standards in their practices. So I think this is an important development in what is at the moment a trend that I hope does not get reversed, in which the federal government essentially puts local communities on notice that while there are lots of reasons that traditional police practices in local communities are respected by those local communities, too often they are not. And the one binding obligation that every cop and every agency in the country has is to the Constitution.
And so the Justice Department has undertaken similar type investigations into other cities, Chicago, Cleveland, Albuquerque, Ferguson, Missouri, among others. So, you know, Norm, is this becoming, you know, the norm?
It's really hard to call it the norm because I think we have something in the neighborhood of 14 agencies that are under federal investigation or in which there have been consent decrees negotiated or court orders invoked in these agencies. But there are 18,000, roughly 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the country. So it's safe to say that while the Obama administration has conducted through its Department of Justice many more investigations than its predecessors, it doesn't represent anything like the kind of oversight that I think is necessary.
Okay, so back to our original topic here, looking at this new, this has been called for, this collection of data from police departments across the country to figure out what's happening with these high-profile shootings. So what is new here, Amanda? Don't we already have some information?
Yeah, well, we have some information, like the information we debuted a couple of weeks ago with the Texas Justice Initiative. California also does a good job of publishing their arrest-related death data. But in general, the federal government hasn't done a very good job of collecting this sort of information on a nationwide level. So the recent BJS announcement is really a revamping of the data collection that we saw in the 2000s that was largely a failure, and that we learned was a failure around 2014 and later. So this is definitely a necessary move and will hopefully give us a better picture of what is happening nationwide in deaths in the course of arrests.
Norm, as a former police chief, how difficult would it be to comply with this regulation?
Not difficult at all. We're not talking about huge numbers. We're actually talking about quite small numbers. But if every law enforcement agency in the country, city, county, state, federal for that matter, were under orders to provide that data to the federal government, and there were penalties associated with failure to do so, I think we'd see compliance very quickly.
It's a, the, what would be the penalties? Do you know, Amanda or Norm?
Well, I saw that in the BJS, and their kind of revamping of the program, they do affiliate, I think it's, there's 10% of federal funds at risk for law enforcement agencies and for states. So there is, I think for the first time, some accountability in this reporting. The extent to which that will be enforced is an open question, and also the extent to which we'll see compliance is still an open question. But we do see some teeth associated with this new requirement.
So 10% of what they receive from the federal government would be lost. But, I mean, do all of these law enforcement agencies get money from the feds, Norm? You said we have so many, and that goes to, like, local school district and transit authorities. Everyone's got a police department these days.
Sure. Well, just a quick story. Many years ago, in the 1970s, as a matter of fact, our police chief in San Diego was a San Diego cop for 28 years. And we had a police chief who defied the federal government when it came to basically equal employment opportunity rights. This was during the advent of women in, not policing, but women in patrol. And if a woman could not, for example, work in patrol, she'd be denied access to promotion, so on and so forth. So the feds stepped in and said, you have to start hiring women, putting them in uniforms, and putting them on the streets. And our chief said, I'm not going to do it. And he was sitting at a meeting with the city manager, at which point the feds said, then we're going to withhold federal funds. And the chief at the time said, well, take your best shot, until they started listing all the federal money that the city of San Diego was receiving for anything associated with public safety. It had to do with highways. It had to do with streets. There was a long list of potential funding sources that would be cut for the city of San Diego, and the city manager said, we fold. And that it took federal muscle to get the chief at that time. All successive chiefs have been very strongly supportive of women in policing. But that chief was kind of a throwback, and his attitude was, it's not going to happen in my city. And as soon as you had the leverage that Amanda is talking about, money talks.
And Norm Stamper, you do point out in your book, To Protect and Serve, How to Fix America's Police, that women police officers have proven to be just as effective as male police officers.
And in many respects, more effective. It's my personal experience. This becomes highly anecdotal, but certainly substantial research supports much of what I'm about to say. Women officers are generally more effective at diffusing conflict situations. They're more effective at de-escalation techniques. They're more effective, in my experience, at meeting deadlines and establishing quality control over the work that they do. That's a generalization, as with all generalizations, needs to be treated with caution.
Okay, but, all right. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back. We're going to continue our discussion about the attempt by the Justice Department to collect data about police shootings across America. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. As the nation looks at cell phone videos online of questionable shootings by police officers, the Obama administration is moving forward with a plan to better track killings by the police. There has been no central collection of this exact information before, making it impossible to track and scrutinize, but there are still questions about what kind of information will be gathered and how it will be used. We're speaking with Norm Stamper, retired police chief of police for the Seattle Police Department. He's the author of the book, To Protect and Serve, How to Fix America's Police, and also Amanda Woog. She is the project director of the Texas Justice Initiative at the University of Texas at Austin. And Amanda, when I see that the feds are going to be collecting this data from local police officers, it makes me wonder about some federal police agencies like the Border Patrol and how little we know about their record when it comes to deadly encounters.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, and that's one of the questions I've been asked a fair amount since we launched the Texas Justice Initiative, is the extent to which federal reporting is included in our project, and it's not. So the state doesn't have authority to require the federal authorities to also report to the state their data. So I think it's a hope in having this federal level of data collection that we'll get more information on what the federal law enforcement agencies are doing as far as arrest-related deaths are concerned.
Do we know if the data that's being collected this way from the police departments, will that be accessible by someone like yourself who has put together an online database for deaths in state custody?
That's one of the big questions that I have right now. So when the program was underway in the 2000s, there were annual reports that were released for about, I think, 7 different years. What I would love to see is incident-level data available and as close to real-time as possible, so that people who are studying in certain states or certain local jurisdictions can collect that federally collected data at the same time that they're collecting their data at the more local level, and kind of compare and be able to have a more robust data set. So one of the big open questions I have right now with this BJS announcement is how they're going to make the data available and whether it'll be incident level data.
And what are the fields that you want to see covered, each data point that you want in every shooting? What do you want to know, Amanda?
Well, of course, cause of death. The BJS did outline some of the requirements that they were having in their reporting. So there was cause of death, what led to the incident, demographic information for the person who was killed, the location of the incident. All that is really valuable information. One thing that Texas has in our custodial death reports that California does not have, and I haven't really seen in other places, is a narrative component, which would be really incredible to have with a data set of this breadth that we're about to see through BJS. So including some kind of narrative of how the incident occurred would really enrichen the collection.
So Norm Stamper, why do you think we don't have this already in place?
I think, in two words, home rule. That's been the tradition government-wide, and states' rights, obviously, as well. This notion that policing is a local phenomenon and should be. I take the view that since we are talking about a binding set of rules embedded in the Constitution, and particularly in the first 10 amendments of that Constitution, that local agencies do have an obligation to report this information, and an obligation, a much larger obligation, to meet procedural justice demands that are explicit in the Constitution of the United States. They're binding on all 50 states. They're binding on all roughly 18,000 law enforcement agencies.
Now, they're looking to collect all data in regards to arrest-related deaths. And arrest-related, what does that mean, Norm? Is this, if I pull somebody over and didn't intend to arrest them, and then something goes wrong and there's a shooting, does that still get counted in here?
Yeah, anytime you deprive someone of his or her liberty, and certainly shooting and killing them would be such a deprivation, that becomes an arrest-related death. The death of Eric Garner in Staten Island, for example, is an illustration of a non-shooting death by police of a citizen. So we're essentially talking about all deaths that are at the hands of the police, whether they be a shooting death of a fleeing suspect or an in-custody death.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join our conversation as we talk about this proposed new rule for a data collection for deaths with police officers. 210-614-8980 is the number to call. So, Amanda, we saw that the Washington Post and the Guardian did a collection of data, and they found roughly 1,000 people were killed last year by police in America. But that still wasn't comprehensive, right?
Right, that's correct. Well, so the Washington Post, they were just focused on people who had been shot and killed by the police, which I think is somewhat limited. The Guardian's approach included more of the arrest-related data. And both have provided great services, but I think when you're looking at transparency in government and accountability, to have a government source for this data that's undertaking the collection is really important, and watchdogs can't provide the sort of transparency that we're looking for that government sources can provide. And the BJS approach actually has taken from the Guardian and the Washington Post approaches, which is part of what's innovative about their announcement, in that they'll be doing an open source kind of data collection as opposed to simply just relying on law enforcement agencies to report these deaths. So we've certainly learned a lot from the Washington Post and the Guardian projects, but I think it is really important for government to be involved in creating transparency and accountability around these deaths.
And Amanda, so we saw the death of Sandra Bland. She was in custody in Texas in 2015. She died apparently of a suicide. Would that have counted in this sort of a data collection?
Norm can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe it would have. She was in the custody of the jail at that point. She had already been booked, so I do not think that she would have been counted in this new BJS undertaking.
And Norm, what do you think?
Well, I do think, Amanda, that it's an open question. She was in custody of law enforcement officials. In other words, she was in custody of a Waller County Sheriff's Department, and that certainly qualifies as law enforcement. So I think it's a point that does need clarification. I would certainly be arguing, I suspect you would as well, that it should be counted. And obviously, if there is any kind of a narrative, if you're doing research or you're involved in any kind of oversight responsibilities, you can look at and distinguish one death from another, arrest-related death.
So I would hope...
Right, which is what the Texas Justice Initiative has done. So the Texas law requires the arrest-related and also the jail and prison deaths to all be counted within the same reporting program. I think the BJS approach has been the arrest-related reporting, and then they also have a custodial death reporting program, which is the jail and prison side of it. So I think they're trying to have a comprehensive approach, but have kind of siloed it by arrest-related and then the custodial death, which is the jail and prison approach.
So are these type of issues going to get worked out in this commenting period? Because this rule is not a rule yet. There's a process to be had. Norm?
Well, Amanda certainly would be the expert on that, but I believe the answer would be yes.
Amanda?
I think they'll probably hear a fair amount from law enforcement agencies on like their estimates for how much time this will take and sort of the nuts and bolts in the reporting. I think that as far as the success of the program goes, it'll take a couple years of data collection to really know whether compliance is being monitored and whether folks are actually complying with it. So I think we'll see a lot of comment, and the implementation will be a pretty good start, but I think it'll be a couple of years till we can really judge the program.
So the idea, I guess, is to get better information so we can come up with better policies to reduce these types of incidents, or try to weed out more of the bad apple police that we keep hearing about. And Norm, do you think that's going to be the result of this?
Well, certainly I've taken the position that every time we hear that expression, bad apples, that every law enforcement agency has a certain small number of bad apples. But if we hear it over and over and over again, we probably ought to check the barrel. We ought to be looking at the structure that gives rise to these incidents and see if there isn't something in the structure, the culture of law enforcement that needs attention. And, of course, from my point of view, there is.
So it's one thing to gather information, another thing to act on this information. And Amanda, how do you think that second part of the scenario should work?
On the acting on the information, I agree with Norm completely. I think this gives us the opportunity to take a systemic approach, which is similar to what we saw in the Baltimore report from yesterday, the idea of collecting data to identify systemic problems. So I think that this kind of data collection, especially if it's being reported on the incident level, can help identify the so-called bad apples, but can also help us identify the more systemic problems that we're seeing, and hopefully come up with more wide-scale solutions as well.
So, Norm, I mean, you've been a police chief. Does it really vary from city to city in the culture of a police department?
The short answer is yes, it varies greatly. There are certain things in common. One of them is a tendency, I think, on the part of law enforcement to assume a position of dominance or superiority when it comes to these kinds of issues. And we say to, quote, outsiders, including very well-informed researchers like Amanda, you just don't know how it really is out there on the streets or, for that matter, in attempting to administer a law enforcement agency. That kind of smugness is not helpful for anyone.
Right. So where does that culture of an individual police department come from?
It comes certainly from its own history. A law enforcement agency that's been in business for 100, 150, 200 years has certainly built up traditions, policies and procedures and practices. And one of the things that's most troubling, I think, to those who would reform law enforcement is you can formulate wonderful policies, you can develop excellent programs of the type, for example, that would track these arrest-related deaths. But unless you win the hearts and minds of the police officers and their supervisors on the streets, they're going to be telling you, forget that stuff that you learned in the academy, forget about all this ivory tower business. We're now about the real world.
So now it's Denzel Washington and Training Day type stuff.
Say it again, please.
Now you go to Denzel Washington and Training Day.
Yeah, that's a very good example. Harsh to watch. A very good example.
And so your book, To Protect and Serve, How to Fix America's Police. Norm, do you think that this proposed rule is going to help bring that about?
I think it will. I think a combination of factors are kind of converging at the moment. One is that over the last 2 years, the American people, white middle class people, for example, have seen horrific shooting incidents. They've also seen some ambiguous ones, and we need to be careful about those, but they've seen a couple of really blatant, unjustified shootings. And when you actually see something as opposed to reading mm-hmm. an official spokesperson's account of something that has taken place in your community, it can create a jarring contrast.
Okay, we're out of time. I want to thank you both, Norm Stamper and Amanda Woog. This is The Source on KSTX, back after the news.